Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, some unique Christmas music brings new hope to AIDS orphans in Zimbabwe. A coalition of farm workers in Florida wins an award for its work to stop modern-day slavery. But first, Pope Benedict speaks of the true joy of Christmas in his message for the third Sunday of Advent. The joy that Christmas brings was at the heart of Pope Benedict's message to thousands of pilgrims and visitors who braved freezing temperatures to join in the Angelus prayer in St. Peter's Square on Sunday. This third Sunday of Advent is also known as Gaudete Sunday, when Roman children traditionally bring their figures of the infant Christ to be blessed by the Pope, ready to be placed in the manger on Christmas Day. My colleague Emma McCarthy reports.
Gaudete in Domino sempre, rallegratevi nel Signore sempre.
Gaudet Sunday, the third Sunday of Advent, is when the Church rejoices in the coming of Christ, and the Christian meaning of joy was at the heart of Pope Benedict XVI's Angelus address. He said true joy lies in the certainty that God is at hand, and not in artificial paradises. He also revealed that at Christmas, many make a wrong turn in their search for this joy.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, anche a Natale si può sbagliare strada.
The Pope said that they often seek an illusory happiness found in cultures that put individual happiness in the place of God, a mentality that has its emblematic effect in the quest for pleasure at all costs, in the spread of the use of drugs, and as an escape, a shelter in artificial paradises. Instead, the Holy Father held up Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta as an example of someone who found real joy. The Pope told thousands of faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square, every day she lived next to misery, human degradation and death, yet she offered the smile of God to everybody she met.
In chi ama così Dio prende dimora, e l'anima è nella gioia.
Joy, repeated the Pope, enters the hearts of those who put themselves at the service of the smallest and poorest.
Occorre che rinfranchiamo i nostri cuori perché il Signore è vicino.
Pope Benedict XVI had already spoken of the meaning of Christmas earlier Sunday morning when he paid a special visit to a parish in Rome, Our Lady of the Rosary of the Portuensi Martyrs, in Magliana, a working-class suburb on the western outskirts of the city. There he told the packed church that the Advent liturgy constantly repeats to us that we have to wake ourselves up from the sleepiness of habit and mediocrity, that we must shake off sadness and discouragement, that we have to replenish our hearts because the Lord is at hand. Inspired by the presence close by of the Generosa catacombs, where some of the martyrs lie buried, the Pope commented that even today, in a different way, Christ's salvific message is being contrasted, and Christians, no less than before, are being called to give the reasons for their hope and to offer the world witness of the truth of the only one who saves and redeems.
Desidera salutare anzitutto i bambini e i ragazzi di Roma.
Back in St. Peter's Square, the joyful cheers of thousands of small children awaited the Pope for the Angelus prayer, clutching in their hands their statues of the infant Jesus. It is a Roman tradition that each Gaudet Sunday, the blessing of the infant takes place, in which children from across the city bring the figure from their nativity scenes to be blessed by the Pope. So many of you have come despite the cold, Pope Benedict XVI thanked them, wishing them and their families the best of season's greetings.
A tutti auguro una buona domenica, la festa, la gioia del Signore di questa domenica gaudete.
And my thanks to Emma McCarthy for that report on Pope Benedict's Angelus address. Christmas is a very special time for children everywhere, although some do seem to have much more to celebrate at this time of year than others. At first sight, it would seem there's not much in common between an orphanage for abandoned Zimbabwean children and a prestigious choir school in the heart of London. In the first, there is little water or electricity. The children have lost their parents to AIDS, and many are HIV positive themselves. The second is a place of privilege and opportunity, where young Catholic boys receive an excellent choral education as part of a liturgical music tradition dating back to the 16th century. But thanks to modern technology and the shared vision of two music professionals, the children of these very diverse backgrounds come together to help us celebrate the true spirit of Christmas.
It's the idea of Hal Broadbent, who's one of the parents of a chorister in our choir, and he works for the Jesuit missions in London. And he had spent a year in Zimbabwe several years ago when he was a student, and was very keen that, particularly at this time when it's acknowledged that it possibly it's at its worst ebb, that we should try and do something constructive with our choir and the choir out at the school in Macumbi.
Lee Ward is director of music at the London Oratory School, where he also runs a liturgical choir, the Schola Cantorum. As well as the regular performances of sacred music, the choir has had some commercial success as well, singing on the soundtracks for Harry Potter, The Lord of the Rings, and more recently the Golden Compass film. But in November, Ward travelled to Zimbabwe for the first time to help record a children's choir at the Macumbi Orphanage, run by four Jesuit priests for kids whose lives have been torn apart by HIV and AIDS.
I was very surprised at how happy they were. Incredible children, really, and they have really so little. For example, you know, we were there for 4 days and there was only 5 hours of electricity in those 4 days, and they'd run out of candles. So, you know, it was sort of pitch black at 6 o'clock at night. And so these children, the only thing they could do was to go to bed. You know, and some of them, you'd have children of 6 months sharing rooms with boys of 17. So the sort of lifestyle that they lead like that is, you know, is not great. And, of course, without electricity, they can't pump water. So it was very difficult for them to collect water, and cooking was difficult as well.
Many of them are also suffering from HIV-related infections, aren't they?
That's right. I think most of them have been orphaned through HIV and AIDS, and a significant amount of them are actually suffering themselves with the disease, yeah.
I shall not leave you orphans.
Accompanying Ward to the children's home was Chris Burkett, a singer, guitarist and producer who's worked with all sorts of rock bands such as Talking Heads and The Pogues. But over his 30-year career, he's become increasingly involved in projects with a humanitarian side to them.
I work with a lot of international artists. I work with Peter Gabriel, Bob Geldof, who's a humanitarian worker. A lot of Buffy St. Marie, she's an American artist who works for Native American rights. So a lot of my projects are involved with, they also cross over with humanitarian principles.
You've also been involved in various projects in Africa, haven't you?
Yes, I worked in the South Africa for a couple of times, and I produced some fairly well-known records down there, which were successful. And at one stage, actually, I was so touched by the enormous wealth of talent in Africa that I actually applied for citizenship of South Africa to open a studio and a record company dedicated to help black musicians from the townships.
Now, more recently, you've been in Zimbabwe, haven't you, recording this song for Christmas. Tell us a bit about this project, how it all started.
Well, there's an old friend of mine called Hal Broadbent. He used to be called Hal St. John, and I did a record with him many years ago at my studio in London called From a Sheltered Flame, and it was a record about homeless people in London. And this is about 20 years ago, and just recently, a couple of months ago, he found me through the internet, through my MySpace site, and he sent me an email. He said, would you like to produce a Christmas record for the Macumbi Mission Choir in Zimbabwe? And I said, I'd love to, because in fact, I'm just working now on a project which is close to my heart, called Music for Life, and this project involves going to poor parts of the world, recording artists that live in poor communities, and making a contract so that the money from the sales go into the community. So we use music to help poverty, to help alleviate poverty. And this is something which I've been very passionate about for many years. I think it's the work of music to do this.
You actually went out to Zimbabwe, didn't you, to the Makumbi Children's Home run by the Jesuit missionaries. Tell us a bit about what it was like.
I didn't know what to expect at all. I was very surprised at the poverty in the country. There's a, you know, it's they have something like 6,000% inflation going on. I didn't know what state the children would be in or the missionary. So I was expecting it to be in little huts and, you know, trying to record stuff in, you know, out in the bush or something. This is in my imagination. But when I arrived, I found it was very well organized. The mission is organized by Father Muller. And he's doing a great job. Everybody has food. They're struggling a lot because there's hardly any water. The electricity supply is very unreliable there, so they have power cuts constantly. So we had to run the music equipment with a generator. But the spirit of the place is amazing. There's about nearly 1,000 people staying there, and the choir itself was the infant choir. When me and Lee arrived, we were welcomed by the choir. They sang us a beautiful song to welcome us. It was very touching. I was in tears. Then we rehearsed with them for the following day. And then on the Saturday, we recorded the kids, and I did a lot of recordings, and took this back to my studio in France and worked on the recording. And then I put the music around the choir, because we didn't have the technology for the choir to sing on any music. They sing very, very very free and very naturally. So it's quite an interesting project, because they were singing the song, but throughout the song, because they're not used to singing with instruments, there's no organ at the church there, there's nothing. I borrowed a guitar of one of the priests, and I tried to keep the kids into a regular pitch for the record. But of course, by the end of the song, it always went down about 4 semitones, so that was quite a lot of work to get them where they should be musically. After that, I took the recording to London, and we went to the Angel Studios in Islington with the Scholar Choir. And the Scholar Choir sang on top of the music and the Makumbi Orphan Choir, which were already there. So they sang with them afterwards. So that's how we put it together. It was kind of an international overdub situation.
What about the boys back there in London? How do you think they have been affected by this rather unusual project?
And I think it's had a very moving effect on our boys. I mean, they simply hadn't been exposed to that sort of thing before, a lot of them. And I've been very impressed at how they've taken on board, and they're all very keen to get their family and friends to download the recording and get the money to go directly to the orphanage. So it's been a very sobering experience for them, I think.
Tell us just then the best way to find a recording of this.
It's now, as from today, it's downloadable on iTunes, and it costs 79p, and 49p of that will go directly to the orphanage. So you can also get more details on a website we set up, which is www.silentnight2007.com, and that gives some information about the background of the orphanage as well.
And my thanks there to Lee Ward, Director of Music at the London Oratory School, and to Chris Burkett, producer of this rather special Christmas record. Once again, that website where you can find more details, www.silentnight2007.com. An American coalition of agricultural workers has been presented with an award from Anti-Slavery International, the world's oldest human rights organisation. Founded to combat the slave trade in the 19th century, the London-based organisation is dedicated to fighting the modern and often more insidious forms of slavery which continue to plague countries across the world today. The 2007 Anti-Slavery Award has been presented to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, which is leading the fight against forced labour amongst agricultural workers in the United States. Based down in Florida, the coalition has successfully targeted some of the world's largest food corporations, demanding that they take action to stop slave labour in their supply chains.
When we speak of slavery, we're speaking of slavery that meets the legal definition under U.S. federal law.
Laura Germino is anti-slavery coordinator for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. She told me more about how the organization began back in the early 1990s.
Yes, it was a few dozen workers getting together to reflect on their reality and analyze on how they could act to begin to change what they were seeing, you know, what they were experiencing. The sub-poverty wages, no benefits at all, meaning no health insurance, no sick leave, no pensions, nothing that you would see as a normal work arrangement in other industries. No right to overtime, no right to organize. The farm workers are formally excluded from the right to organize or the right to overtime under federal law.
You say these are farm workers. What kind of work are they doing exactly, and what kind of conditions are they actually working in?
Farm workers in Florida, the most significant crops are tomatoes and oranges. So they pick tomatoes and oranges in Florida for 8 or 9 months of the year, and then they go north to follow the harvest in the summer months to the northern states as far as New York, and then coming back down to Florida again. And it's back-breaking, grueling work in the broiling sun. And, for example, in tomatoes, you pick a 37-pound bucket of tomatoes for roughly 45 cents a bucket. And it's the same, virtually the same piece rate per bucket that you get paid as it was 30 years ago. These are large agribusinesses that supply fruit and vegetables to transnational, transglobal corporations like the fast food industry and the supermarket industry, like Burger King, like Subway, the chain Subway, like Tropicana. These are fruits and vegetables that go all over the world.
And part of your campaign has been trying to target these global corporations and make them responsible for doing something to end the slave labor that's going on down in Florida.
Well, what we have is that there are these terrible conditions, exploitative conditions in the fields that create a climate that enable forced labor or modern-day slavery to take root. And the large corporate buyers who are being supplied with these vegetables have enormous market power. They buy at a very high volume to get a low price, and they are able to set conditions for health and safety standards or other kinds of standards. They could easily set standards as well for human rights, for labor standards for workers. And that's why we've had success so far in our national campaigns, where now we have two large corporate buyers, the Yum! Brands chain, which owns Taco Bell, KFC, and Pizza Hut and other restaurants, as well as McDonald's, who, after our national campaigns, have come on board and made historic agreements to both pay more money back down the supply chain so that the farm workers harvesting the produce can earn more than a sub-poverty wage, as well as agreeing to developing, with worker participation, a code of conduct for suppliers that raises the labor standards for the workers.
When you say some of these workers are being paid sub-poverty wages, it's also worse than that in some cases, isn't it? There are also people being forced to work for nothing. Is that true?
Yes. The majority of workers earn, let's say, an average of $10,000 a year, which is below the poverty level in the U.S. But then there's an all-too-significant percentage who are actually held in forced labor. They're unable to leave. They're held against their will. Employers use violence, including beatings, shootings, pistol whippings, assaults, and threats of violence, such as threats of death to families back home, to ensure that workers don't leave. And they're told that you owe a debt and that you're not free to leave until you pay off that debt. But then you end up earning little or no pay. We've had people in forced labor operations telling us that they earn $0 a week or $20 a week, $40 a week. And these are cases that, after we uncovered and investigated them, the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division in the U.S. prosecuted the employers for on slavery charges in federal court. And the employers were found guilty.
How do the workers end up in these appalling conditions?
From poverty. People are desperately looking for work. It's the idea that you can have a job where you'll be able to make a decent living and support your family. And traffickers, that is, the people who hold workers against their will, take advantage of that vulnerability. But whether it be immigrants who are coming over from Guatemala and Mexico, or in the most recent case we dealt with, it was homeless U.S. citizens who were promised a roof over their heads and a job. They were recruited at homeless shelters. So it comes from both people being desperately poor and needing to work, therefore being vulnerable, and then the reason the operation, the slavery operation, is actually able to take root and thrive is because of the extreme imbalance of power between employers and workers in the agricultural industry.
The data is very difficult to obtain on this, as you can imagine. However, groups like Immokalee Coalition and Catholic Charities here in the diocese continually look to the problem to try and get at the roots of the difficulty and to confront the growers.
Bishop Frank Duane heads the Diocese of Venice in Florida, where the Coalition of Immokalee Workers is based. He says the church has been very supportive of these efforts to stamp out forced labor and trafficking.
Many times with forced labor, the difficulty is to get to the real root of the problem, because the worker themselves is afraid to talk. Many times they're not here legally anyway, so they realize they're in trouble and they tend to become very quiet. And so to get to the root of the problem, who is trafficking in the workers, that is very difficult.
What kind of support can the church offer in this context?
Well, I know that in our parish down in Immokalee, which is called Our Lady of Guadalupe, the Catholic Charities has a center there, and the priests who are there are all Spanish-speaking. Now they have, and we also have one Haitian priest, because some of the workers are coming from Haiti also. They have regular contact with the people and are very much out, and the people are coming to Catholic Charities for assistance. They hear a great deal of where the difficulty is, who they try and stay away from. And with such leads as this, we're able to ourselves investigate and look into some situations where their workers are not treated justly, but particularly also to sometimes indicate that this particular individual, it has been suggested the person might be working with trafficked laborers.
To the people in the more wealthy areas of your diocese, though, it must seem almost impossible to believe that there are so many people being exploited, being trafficked, and really working in slave-like conditions.
Well, you're absolutely correct on that, Philippa. It's a well-to-do area that they do find it difficult. You know, I think there's a tendency in the United States to think that slavery ended. And we all know of Abraham Lincoln, and we go back any number of years. Well, it has not in some very sophisticated ways. Sophisticated in the sense where individuals are trafficked in, they're working hard and long hours, their passports are taken away, they're basically held prisoners. So this phenomena is still around, and you are correct. Many people just, even if I bring it up, they'll say, oh, that doesn't exist here. But it does, and you try and indicate, you know, it's just down the road, really. You don't have to go very far. And you have the phenomena of a modern-day slavery.
When you talk to U.S. press, for example, it's very easy for them to absorb that there's child slave labor going on in the Ivory Coast, say, in the coffee industry, or that there was. But when you say, well, it's actually going on here in the U.S. as well, there is an automatic initial reaction of disbelief. And it's really because it's extremely troubling that it's still going on in the U.S. in the 21st century. And at the same time, though, once that awareness has been raised in the American consumer's mind, they're absolutely outraged, and we've had an enormous groundswell of support of allies from the faith-based groups, student population, just your average consumer, in saying, I don't want to participate in modern-day slavery in the food I eat or in the clothes I wear or in the coffee I drink in any way.
You say you also work together with faith-based organizations. Are there particular churches that have come on board this campaign?
The United States Catholic Conference of Bishops has shown that they're extremely interested in seeing justice prevail in the agricultural industry. It's been something that's helped us incredibly over the years. The Catholic Church has been with us for over a decade now. And then the Presbyterian Church USA has devoted an enormous amount of time and resources and mobilization of parishioners as well. They're out marching with us, writing letters, participating in the boycott once resolutions have been approved. It's moral support, which is incredibly important.
I do believe the church, particularly in the southern rim of the United States, is involved, is attentive to this. I know with my contacts with the Immokalee Coalition itself, to support them in what they do, I was very pleased when I heard they received this award and wrote a letter to congratulate them on that. But I do believe the church is working, Philippa. Now, there's always more that can be done. That I'll grant right away. Because whenever a human being, their dignity is ignored in such a profound way, it's really a scar to all of humanity.
My thanks there to Bishop Frank DeWayne of the Diocese of Venice in Florida and Laura Germino, anti-slavery coordinator for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the Vatican Radio's English program for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.